Oh my God, episode
53.
53 every goddamn every time like clockwork.
53. Look at me.
So we are recording this podcast in Philadelphia, mm-hmm. so the audio quality may be weird because we're in a hotel room.
We are on a hotel room sitting on hotel beds mm-hmm. recording a podcast just for you.
Yes.
And so be patient with us with the quality if it is bad.
Sorry about that.
But it's for you.
We're going to talk a little about our experience at Podcast Movement, mm-hmm. which we are at right now, the comedy conference, or not, podcast conference.
Yeah.
And then we are going to talk about the weird Iran-Trump tweet war, like what's going on and what would really happen if we went to war with Iran.
Yeah. And then I'll be talking a little bit about Nia Wilson and the tragedy that happened in Oakland on Sunday.
Yes, and then we're going to go in depth a little about what we talked about at our panel
mm-hmm.
Before at reading Podcast some reviews. Movement. Yes, and then we'll shout you out. So stay tuned.
Bye.
Who are we? Where do we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hello. Hello. Oh my God.
Hi, Anna.
Hi, Sheree Ray.
It's been so long.
Oh my God, I never see you anymore.
Just kidding. We are currently recording in a hotel room in Philadelphia.
That's right. That's why the audio is probably going to be terrible. But you know what? Stick with us because this setup is really absurd.
We're both sitting on our hotel beds.
Yes.
We're
like ill.
Yeah, the microphones are attached to the side table in the middle of us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just Ethnically Ambiguous goes national, you know?
And by national, we mean just to Philadelphia.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Nowhere else to go.
But yeah, we're here for Podcast Movement. We forgot to mention that last week, and I wanted to, but I forgot because I'm a dummy.
Yeah. We're not good at promoting ourselves sometimes.
No, we're really not. But we're here. We spoke on a panel today. It's Wednesday, the 25th today, and it was fun. We were with Bridget from Stuff Your Mom Never Told You. We had a good time, you know, just spitting the shit.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I liked it. We got some swag.
Yeah, we got so much free podcast swag. Every like podcast company either has the word pod or cast or like
or some box. Type of pun.
Yeah. It's all like podcast box.
Yeah.
Pod land.
Rock the cast box.
Cast box is a company.
I'm sorry, first.
Yeah, it's
fun.
It's a good time.
Yeah, it's fun. We got some shirts. We got some notebooks mm-hmm. and some totes. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, a lot of totes. Totes are strong out here. Teas.
Totes.
Beer koozies.
Oh my God, so many beer koozies.
Pins, stickers.
Yeah. T Public was there, who does our merch, and we saw one of our t-shirts at this thing, which was really exciting.
We posted on Insta.
Yeah, big old shirt with our name on it.
Big old shirt.
Big old shirt. But yeah, Philadelphia is really nice.
It's cool. We've been exploring.
Town. Yeah.
You know, we went to a classic location that truly, like, just lit me up as if I've never experienced life before, was the Rocky Steps.
Yes, yes. We went to the Rocky Steps. Anna punched me.
Look, what can I say? Sometimes I get excited.
We had like a mini little photo shoot, and we were like, okay, now hug his legs. And then I was like, okay, now punch me. And then mm-hmm. we had this whole audience of people, and I was told that someone laughed when I said that, so that validated my existence.
Yeah, we did multiple poses, and my final favorite one was Shireen let me punch her in front of the Rocky statue.
Yes. Yeah, I let her punch me. I let her win. Yeah. I did let her win.
It's because Shireen's never seen Rocky, and I've seen them all like 1,000 times. I'm like a big Rocky.
I know.
Little did you know.
I did not know this either, and now I need to go watch Rocky so I can understand Anne a little bit better.
I mean, I wouldn't say what did you anything about me, but
I just didn't know you were a Rocky head, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I just grew up watching them. Like, my dad liked the films.
Oh.
My dad's a Sylvester Stallone head. I want to say he's a head, but he definitely watches Sylvester Stallone movies.
Yeah, well, that's cool. I'm gonna do my research now. And then today we went to a place I've been like nonstop talking about for...
Wait. We're going to just roll over the Liberty Bell? We might as well. Liberty Bell was trash. It was like... what is this, like, cup?
It's already broken anyway. Ugh. Who cares?
Guys, also, you don't need to pay to see the Liberty Bell. There's like 15 windows surrounding it, and you just see look it. At it.
We were like maybe like 10 feet away from it with a window.
And you can like press a button that just tells you about it. I was like, why are people paying to see the Liberty
Bell? They were like standing in line. Like at least 30 or 40 people were standing in line to see the Liberty Bell. And also, it's smaller than I imagined.
It's so small.
That's what she said.
I'm not impressed.
Yeah.
That's what she said as well.
Sad. But then today we went to Dottie's Donuts, which is a place that I've been dreaming about since I found out.
Shreen has not shut up about Dottie Donuts since we've got here.
I know. Well, shut up. I'm wearing a Dottie's Donuts t-shirt.
She's
right now.
Literally wearing a Dottie's Donuts t-shirt.
As a vegan, I really appreciate any vegan establishment, let alone a vegan donut establishment. And they have a very amazing social media presence that just like they post these like yummy, amazing donut pictures, and I'm just And I finally
we mostly ate vegan this entire week.
I know. Anna indulged me, so I really appreciate that.
It's not even indulging. Like, I honestly don't give a shit.
I mean, I appreciate it.
Like, cause I'm to this I feel point like where food is food.
Yeah.
And vegan, put it in my belly.
I mean, I appreciate whenever, like, I don't feel like I'm, like, putting someone out by, like, not letting them eat meat
or
some shit.
I don't understand when someone loses their goddamn mind over, like...
I need my meat.
Yeah, like, it's my like... protein. Okay, but, like, chill.
Yeah.
It's okay. You can, like, have one meal that's... Yeah, I don't know. It's weird to me. You kept being like, oh, thank you so much. And I was like, what, dude? We're just eating. Doesn't matter to me. Yeah. Also, I go in and out of being veg. So yeah. I was raised pescatarian and meat doesn't always sit well with me. So like, you know what? Hey, what's up?
You were raised pescatarian?
Yeah.
With your parents?
My dad eats a lot of red meat, but my mom is pescatarian. So I was mostly raised on that diet.
Oh, I didn't know that about you. I did not know that. I'm the only one in my family that doesn't eat meat.
Yeah, no, my dad's an aggressive red meat eater. He grills every weekend, but like I just don't digest it very well.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
So I just eat a lot of fishies, and I occasionally eat meat, but then I have to take a poop, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
sorry, I'm very Philly now. That was not Philly.
Philly has changed us.
We had one instance where we watched a guy who almost got hit by a car just yell, "I'm gonna fucking kill you!" And we were like, "Wow, we've really been in Philly for a while."
Yeah.
I was like, and then yesterday,
it was this morning. God, these fucking days are blending together. This morning, we went to get breakfast and
Reading Terminal Market.
It's spelled Reading, yeah, it's pronounced Reading. But it's really cute. But we went there to get breakfast before our panel, and we were wearing our like panel or like convention badges and lanyards like fucking nerds. But the guy that was checking us out at the register for breakfast, he was like, "Oh, what do you guys do?" And I was like,
"We're a podcast.
Yeah,
we're podcasters." And he's like, "What's the podcast?" And I was like, "Ethnically Ambiguous." And he was like, "I don't know what that is." And I was like, "I honestly didn't think you would," but I didn't say that out loud. But I was like, "Yeah." And he said, "The only podcast I've ever listened to is Joe Rogan." And I was like, "Yeah, that's a big one." And then there was just like an awkward pause, and I was like, "We're like little Joe Rogans." And he was like, "Oh, okay." And I was like, "Okay, bye."
Yeah.
I don't even know why I said it, but it was a really fun experience in my opinion. Said it to be like, maybe you'll listen thinking we're little Joe Rogans, but honestly, he won't.
No, he won't.
Because if he figures it out, he's like, we're nothing like Joe Rogan. But, you know, I thought I would try.
Yeah. It was worth
it. It was like guerrilla marketing.
Yeah. I really do appreciate, though, on that note, the fact that, like, our listeners that showed up here, like, made a point to, like, come up to us either after our panels or, like, we had someone show up at Dottie's Donuts because his girl couldn't make
Sarah,
shout out
Sarah.
So thanks so much for
and
everybody.
Shout out Morgan who came up to us Morgan. After the panel. It was nice to meet you.
And Chris, on Tuesday's panel that I was on, he came up to me. He was really nice. Who else? There was,
there are a few other people. I'm blanking on
Adalno.
Names.
Was that his name? Oh, God, I'm the worst. But there were a lot of nice, cool people that came up and then just made us feel cool about being there and meeting you guys. It's a podcast. We can't see your fans.
It's a podcast.
We can't see our fans, so it's nice to put a face to your faceless names.
Faceless names. I mean, we can see your Twitter avatars, but we don't really.
Yeah,
like
for
hard.
The most part, it's like a like a meme. I don't know.
Like a meme.
State Farm is there. Oh, like a meme.
Mm-hmm.
This is episode 53. Wow. Recording in a hotel room.
53. Look, guys, we're on the road now.
We're on the road. Ethically Ambiguous goes on tour.
We just do strictly hotel room recordings yeah. now while we both sit in our separate beds.
Yep. Yeah.
What are you going to do? The world's a crazy place. That's my Philly accent. Oh, man. It's terrible. Also, we have my good friend Sarah here.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe you guys know her as Overalls Sarah.
Overall Sarah.
Overalls on the weekend,
I was
Sarah.
Extremely disappointed when I first met her. She was not wearing overalls, and that was because she had the assumption that I would be wearing overalls, and she was right.
Yeah, she said she didn't want to give me any more ego to be surrounded by overall people. And I was like, she's working.
But I was overall disappointed. I was overall disappointed.
We have someone across the room from us ignoring us recording a podcast.
But Sarah is a really good friend. And I'm really glad I got to meet her because she's such a good supporter of the show. And yeah. I really appreciate that.
And Sarah also does podcasting work. Sarah, explain what you do. This is Sarah. We're now entering Sarah.
Hi, I'm Sarah.
Get closer.
I am working on a project where we preserve podcasts. It's Whoa. Very meta. So we're making a podcast, a zine, and a curriculum, like a workshop, a traveling workshop, where we'll teach people who are not a part of awesome. Big networks, kind of like indie podcasters, on how to preserve their podcast when the apocalypse happens and all your files get lost and aliens take over.
I think you have a voice for podcasting. Your voice is so calm and nice.
I used to work on radio.
Oh. Wait. Really. Wait, tell. Okay, so you met someone today that blew my mind. Who is she?
I met someone who blew.
Was it yesterday or today? There's only one of her in the world.
Oh, I met a podcast librarian.
And there's only one of her in the whole world.
Radio Public, Mayan.
Yeah.
She's cool. She's the one and only podcast librarian.
Isn't that crazy?
It exists now. Podcasts are that big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. You guys, you heard it here first. Podcast, I've never heard of such a thing. Sarah always knows about these weird things.
Yeah.
She's going to archive our podcast for us.
Yes.
What's your program called?
Preserve This Podcast.
Wow. So check that out. When's that drop?
November, February? I should know this. I don't know.
November and February are very far away from each other.
We'll promote it regardless when we find out. But Sarah's the best. I would support her in everything she does. It's been a joy having her along with us, especially at Dottie's when she witnessed my donut coma.
Watch me. Sarah's my bestie from college.
Yeah.
We don't speak unless we have to, and that's like how close we are.
Yeah. I have one of those, you know. That's your best friend understands you.
Yeah. We literally never speak unless we need to. And that's a true friendship.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
I'm just kidding. We Instagram meme all day.
What's a true friendship? You don't talk, you only send memes.
It's true. We don't have to have any sort of like just deep convo. We're just like, do you see that meme I sent you?
Yeah.
And you know what? And that's what matters.
But it is really nice, even because Sarah's based in New York, and she's always like liking and supporting our stuff and like retweeting us or just,
she like listens.
Yeah, like that's a weird thing.
I guess that's how she keeps up with me.
Yeah,
listens to my podcast.
It was no, because she asked me some questions like, "What did you ask me that?" I was like, "Do I talk about that?"
Like,
oh she's like, "Oh, your sister moved out," and I was like, "Whoa, like how do you know that?" She's like, "Your podcast." Mm. I genuinely don't remember what I talk about on the show. I block out everything as soon as we're done. It was funny because she knew all the stuff about me, and I was like, I forgot that I talk on this thing.
Yeah, you do. We talk about ourselves.
Yeah, I know. I just forget.
I just had deja vu that we've had this conversation before with you.
On hotel beds?
No, it's just that we've talked about how you've talked about things and then don't remember.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, we talk about personal stuff, and you're like, oh. And like, whoa, deja vu.
I feel like this might have happened anyways.
Okay, let's call the police. Okay. That's another one of my Philly impressions. I'm really bad at this.
You're very bad at Philly impressions.
Hey, whatever.
I'm Rocky.
I kept saying I'm Rocky. There's a lot of video of me. Maybe one day I'll post it to the internet where Shereen just got me just yelling, I'm Rocky, at the stairs.
Yeah.
I just kept being like, I'm Rocky. And no one really appreciated it. A lot of people.
I'm Rocky.
A lot of people running up those stairs. What if I didn't get it? I'm like, what is going on? Like,
what are these stairs?
I've like seen the movie 100 times. Yeah. I'm like, why is everyone running up these stairs? Why is everyone playing Eye of the Tiger? That was a Rocky joke.
I mean, I haven't seen Rocky, but I'm assuming they play Eye of the Tiger as he's running up the stairs.
Yeah. Well, this is like a theme within the entire film where Eye of the Tiger is just playing.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, it is.
There it is. Oh, yeah.
No, wait, no, that's just the theme of Rocky.
Oh, it is?
Eye of the Tiger is like...
Eye of a Tiger.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, whatever. That was a
they play that while he's running, but the rest of the theme is...
Yeah.
I might make Shireen watch Rocky after this, and it is like midnight.
Literally. This is podcast.
I will rent it. I will rent it on Amazon Prime and make Shireen watch this.
I wish those podcast nerds at this convention could see us now.
I know. There are so many podcast nerds here.
Yeah.
You've never thought
like
podcasting was such a nerdy industry until you go to Podcast Movement, and then you're like, damn, y'all love this shit.
Yeah. It's my little sister was at a panel at Comic-Con this past weekend, and here I am at the nerdiest version of Comic-Con in Philadelphia. It's pretty wild. But yeah.
It's like tech nerdy, though.
Yeah.
Ugh, it's so weird. All right, world. Hey. So, in this episode, I've been doing some research. I don't know if you guys heard, but this past week was a great week for Iran and Trump. I'm going to try and go through this quickly, but let me tell you a little about what happened. So, Iranian President Hassan Rouhani, the so-called progressive president, but whatever, he, like, did a little talk, a speech, a press conference. I don't know. He addressed some diplomats on Sunday in Tehran, which is, this is all according to the state-run news agency, IRNA, which, I mean, let's, I don't know, it's Iran, so who knows?
Suspect.
So he warned the U.S. that war with Iran would be the, in quotes, the mother of all wars. And he, like, but it was, you know, he was trying to be like...
Dude, he can watch his Game of Thrones. Mother of all dragons.
I'm sure he does watch Game of Thrones. You'd be surprised how much American TV people watch in Iran. It's actually really crazy. Like, they all have their VPN set up, and they're all, like,
ready. My cousins learned English by watching American sitcoms.
Yeah, they got it.
Yeah.
Same. And then he also said, Americans must understand that war with Iran is the mother of all wars, and peace with Iran is the mother of all peace, which is just like, okay. And then he also said, do not play with the lion's tail, because you will regret it eternally. God, Iranians
and
speak
I
in such,
the
like,
mother of dragons.
Yeah, they like to, like, really give you, like, really eerie language.
Like metaphors with animals. And
it's really interesting when you translate, like, certain sayings from Farsi, you're like, what are you talking
yeah,
about?
Same
like,
in
just
Arabic,
talk
yeah.
normally. Which is not
it's
a thing.
Bizarre.
Yeah. Yeah, you're like, what? Maybe we'll do that with my dad someday.
Yeah.
We'll, our parents, like, we'll make them say something, we'll translate it.
Yeah,
like,
I like
why?
That.
Why?
Yeah.
Anyway, so, but they did not, he did not, Rouhani did not rule out the possibility of a peace agreement with the U.S. So I don't know what's going on. And he also, yeah, so his comments basically come because the Trump administration, they announced they were quitting the Iran deal, as we talked about in the past, on past episodes, and they were going to, like, basically reinstate sanctions on the country, and the sanctions are supposed to start on November 4th, and, like, I think more than 50 international firms have said they're leaving the Iranian market.
Wow.
That's according to Brian Hook, who's State Department Policy and Planning Director. And then, yeah, and I guess earlier this month, which I also brought up in a previous episode, the U.S. and Iran are, like, in a fight over Iranian oil exports because the Trump administration wants to get the number of countries importing Iranian crude oil down to zero.
Whoa.
Which is idiotic.
It's not good for either party at all.
Right, and with the nuclear deal, everyone else who is involved in it is going to stay involved in it. So, what is it, like, Germany, England, you guys know the rest. I'm, like, completely blanking on who else is in it. It's the JPCOA. They're all going to stay in it. The only person who pulled out is
the
U.S. So now it's, like, the four people. Anyway, so Iran's pretty pissed about this, like, comment about the Iran and how all they're, like, basically threatening sanctions on other countries unless they stop importing oil from Iran, which is interesting because I think Iran is now India's biggest oil importer.
Whoa.
Aside from Saudi Arabia, I think, which, yeah, it's weird. So, of course, Trump, losing his fucking mind, he put, like, an all caps tweet out to the Iranian regime on Sunday night, and he was, like, threatening them.
Just in all caps, just, like... And you know he's a fucker that uses caps lock and not the shift key, so I hate him.
Yeah, and so He tweeted, to Iranian President Rouhani, never ever threaten the United States again or you will suffer the consequences, the likes of which few throughout history have ever suffered before. And then he also wrote, we are no longer a country that will stand for your demented words of violence and death. Be cautious.
Oh my God.
Right. So you're like, okay. Senior officer in Iran's Revolutionary Guard, Commander General Gholam Hossein Gaibparvar. So he described Trump's remarks as psychological warfare. Basically, that his administration has already intensified the mm-hmm. rhetoric against Iran. And this, like, comes after U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. He, like, said the Iranian regime was, like, the mafia. And he said, like, the clerics that ruled the country, they basically just enrich themselves and fund terrorism at the expense of ordinary Iranians, which, I mean, that's not that crazy. So Mike Pompeo said, to the regime, prosperity, security, and freedom for the Iranian people are acceptable casualties in the march to fulfill the revolution. And he said, the level of occupation and wealth among regime leaders shows that Iran is run by something that resembles the mafia more than the government. And basically also said that Iran's supreme leader, Ali Khamenei, has a personal hedge fund worth $95 billion.
Whoa.
Right. And so it's kind of interesting because, like, Trump, he's, like, trying to take these, like, weird steps that he took with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un by, like, taunting him and threatening him on social media, which is unnecessary.
Never a good thing to do. Like, oh, I can't think of when is that a good idea to do? Never.
No, it's not an idea. Also, Iran is not North Korea.
Yeah.
It's not the same thing. Like, Iran isn't going to give in to the U.S. pressures. Like, it's just not going to happen. Like, they're not the same way.
Mm-mm.
They're two different countries. And but Trump, he doesn't get it. So, CNN military analysis, CNN military analyst Rick Francona said, we've seen a lot of very bellicose words from Mr. Trump in the past, but this tweet, I think it takes it to a new level. This seems to be a little out of character and really a little alarming for many people. He said, this is very dangerous, which it is. Like, you shouldn't really be tweeting crazy shit at a regime that is very powerful and also can be very evil when
honestly,
they want to
be. Honestly, at this point, I think Twitter should just, like, take down his account. Just for the sake of the fucking world.
Yeah, and then fucking bitch-ass Sarah Sanders, on Monday, she told reporters, if anybody's inciting anything, look no further than to Iran. And then she, like, wouldn't answer whether Trump consulted his national security team before the tweet, even though she claims that he speaks with them daily, but she wouldn't give any details because I doubt he speaks with them daily because he's a fucking loser. And she said, the president's been, I think, pretty strong since day one in his language towards Iran. He's responding to comments made from them, and he's going to continue to focus on the safety and security of American people, which ideally, if he's going to do that, he shouldn't be tweeting crazy ass shit at Iran.
Yeah.
Ugh. And then she wouldn't answer any more questions. So before I continue about other crazy people's responses in the administration, let's take a quick commercial break. And we are back. I mean, Shereen, really focus.
Okay, sorry.
That terrible. I mean, I am that terrible. I just did that. Okay. Anyway, I was before the break, we were talking about the threats Trump's was making to Iran's President Rouhani. I'm so Philly.
Rocky.
I'm Rocky. That Trump was making to Rocky, president of Iran, Rocky. Rocky Rouhani. So of course, Mr. National Security Psycho Advisor John Bolton was like, if Iran does anything at all to the negative, they will pay a price like few countries ever paid before. While he, like, slowly licked his little mustache. He was like, look at my little mustache. My little mustache. John Bolton's mustache should be ripped off his face. And then his dick should be ripped off as well. Anyway, so... John Rood, who's the Pentagon Undersecretary of Defense for Policy, he told CNN's Barbara Starr at some conference that the U.S. hadn't adjusted its military posture in response to threats from Iran. And he said, I don't think that's warranted. I wouldn't recommend that, he said. And he kind of like dismissed Trump's all caps Twitter warning that the country would suffer consequences if it continued, like by just saying it was he was unimpressed by the late night tweet. So even military officials are like,
Who's going to take away Trump's Twitter? Who's going to do it?
No one's going to do it. So Iran experts, they basically said they're unsure if the tweet is going to foreshadow any conflict. But they say it could potentially be a way to engage Iran diplomatically. Karim Sajjadpour, who's an Iran expert at the Carnegie Endowment, he said, the reality is he's such a erratic president that you could see him dropping bombs on Iran, or you could see him trying to build hotels in Iran. He's much more impulsive than he is strategic, which I thought was, like, so spot on. Like, yeah. if a good deal came through, he'd be like, hey, well, you know, Trump Casino, Tehran Trump Casino location, which is just trash. And then, of course, like, because, I don't know if you guys follow Foreign Minister of Iran, Javad Zarif, on Twitter, but this dude claps back at everything and everyone that anyone says about Iran. Like, he's so ready to be like, no. And I just love it. Yeah. He's, like, the king of clapping back, and he does it in, like, 15 tweets, like a 15-tweet thread. He responded with, color us unimpressed.
I love that.
Yeah. So he was, like, and he used, like, all caps to be like, okay. And he wrote, the world heard even harsher bluster a few months. The world heard even harsher bluster a few months ago, and Iranians have heard them, albeit more civilized ones, for 40 years. We've been around for millennia and seen fall of empires, including our own, which lasted more than the life of some countries. Be cautious.
Damn!
So that's basically the response of, like, okay. So, damn.
I just can't wait for Trump to build a hotel over there and then post a picture of, like, him with Persian food being like, I love Iranians. Yeah. I love Persians.
He's like, tadik's my thing.
Yeah.
Okay. But guess what? Another twist. Donald Trump today, well, no, not today. Today's Wednesday. Donald Trump yesterday, Tuesday, he said the U.S. is ready to make a real deal with Iran just days after he threatened them. He said, Iran is not the same country anymore. That I can say. And we'll see what happens. But we're ready to make a deal. Not the deal that was done by the previous administration, which was a disaster. So, first of all this flip-flopping, like, the Trump administration has zero coherent policy towards Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And this is insane. Because... what? You want to make a deal with Iran now? Like, what are you talking
after
about?
After you yelled at them
person?
On Twitter?
Yeah, I can't even. And so, who knows how Iran's probably just going to ignore that and be like, no. Because fuck you.
I mean, just based off of that fucking reply, you can tell that they're not really taking it.
Absolute madness, and it makes no sense. But NPR put out this really good article where they kind of described what would happen if Iran and the U.S. went to war. And they say it's an unmitigated disaster. The U.S. military could do major damage, but Tehran has options to retaliate throughout the region against U.S. forces in Iraq, Syria, Afghanistan, and our allies with conventional weapons, terrorism, and cyber warfare. Iran's Lebanese allies, Hezbollah, could unleash a ferocious war against Israel, and rebel forces in Yemen allied with Iran could escalate missile attacks against Saudi Arabia. And then they say these attacks could kill many Americans and Israelis, seriously set back U.S. efforts to stabilize Iraq and Afghanistan, defeat jihadists in Syria, and then they would ignite a war between Iran and Saudi Arabia over Yemen and destroy critical energy infrastructure in the Persian Gulf and seriously disrupt the flow of oil in the region. And then it would basically cause a sharp spike in global energy prices and possibly trigger a global recession. And depending on how long it, you know, takes, it could just be an entire fucking firestorm. So that is literally the last thing we want.
Yep.
Not to be that bitch, but not interested in war. It's a lot of hubbub right now and a lot of, like, big little dicks trying to pretend they're big dicks.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not smart.
No.
It's not going to end well. These things never end well. You can't just have a bunch of, like, puffed out chests. Mm-mm. Like, talking shit over Twitter.
I just want Twitter to fucking take down his account.
It'll never happen.
But I want it to happen.
At Jack, the, like, leader of Twitter, is such a piece of shit and low-key, like, conservative. He's, like, so chill with the right wing that...
Yeah, but this isn't even a conservative or democratic thing anymore. It's just, I've had my friend had an account that was suspended because he posted, like, a queer image of, like, two guys being together. His account was suspended.
Yeah, because
Twitter... It was during Pride.
Twitter is conservative. They won't admit it.
Oh my god, I fucking hate that so much. Mm-hmm. So I'm talking about something that I would be remiss if I did not even bring it up. It's about Nia Wilson, and if you haven't heard, on Sunday night, the 22nd, she was walking with her two sisters on her way home from a family gathering, and two of them were viciously stabbed on the Bay. It's called the BART, but it stands for Bay Area Rapid Transit. Mm-hmm. It's like this train in Northern California, and she was in Oakland. Yeah, it's like a subway. Public transit. Yeah, but she was 18, and she died because of her injuries. He stabbed her in the neck. He sliced her neck open, and then her 26-year-old sister also stabbed in the neck. She survived after going to the hospital, and their other sister was not harmed, fortunately. But
it's fucked up.
It's really disgusting, and it's getting a lot of press right now. And there've been protests going on, and there was a vigil for her at the BART station as well. But it's on Monday, so it was like a full day of like this manhunt that was happening, and his name was John Lee Cowell. He's 27. He was arrested for the attack Monday evening, and there's a video of him getting arrested, and it's the most peaceful arrest I've ever fucking seen.
Because he's white.
Yeah. The only reason. He's so peaceful. The policemen are like barely recognizing this is a fucking disgusting murderer in front of them. Not that they should. I mean, like, it was just unfortunate. But
I mean, if he was any person of color, he would have been murdered. He would be
on the ground at the very least, getting like assaulted.
Probably shot.
Yeah. But the attack has remained in the news throughout the week because the public conversation has shifted to whether the attack and the authorities' response to it, which was slow in the public's opinion, was racially motivated. And I mean, to many people, the circumstances are obvious. Based on the reporting, her and her sister, they did nothing to provoke the attacker, and apparently he approached them and attacked. Before running off, like, unannounced. And because he's white and because Wilson is black, race has become the obvious motive in many people's minds. But it's really terrifying. One of the sisters, Latifa, which is an Arabic name, and her dad's name is... his last name is Muhammad. So there's some Muslim Arabic roots there, which is even more sad. But not that, I mean, it was already sad to begin with. That's not what I meant. You know what I mean. Whenever I hear an Arabic name, I'm just like, my people. But she said, all of a sudden, we transferred just to get blindsided by a maniac. For what? I don't know. I looked back. He was wiping off his knife, and he stood at the stairs and just looked at us. From then on, I was caring for my sister. She has a couple of siblings, and she's the youngest, and she was described as the most sweet person on the earth, and she didn't do anything to nobody. She really loved music, and she was an aspiring rapper. The vigil was held for her on Monday night, and some of her songs played at the for the crowd. But soon after the stabbing, they identified the murderer because of an anonymous tip to the BART station. It wasn't even the police doing their job, it was just an anonymous tip. But Cowell, he was released from prison just 4 months ago. He was on probation or parole. So some news stations handled this situation extremely poorly because black victims are often treated as guilty even if they are the ones being hurt. But shortly after her murder, a local media outlet, KTVU, it showed a picture of Nia Wilson holding what looked like a gun, but it was just a gun-shaped phone case. But instead of putting out a picture, I mean, out of all the pictures they could have chosen, they chose one where she looks threatening, or she looks like she had it coming in a way. And so KTVU has since apologized for the incident, but it quickly drew a backlash, obviously, because it seemed to portray the victim as guilty in some way and suggested she was somehow involved in violence. And for Black victims of killing, this is a portrayal that's popped up over and over again. And we saw this example, for example, with George Zimmerman when he killed Trayvon Martin in 2012, when fake pictures were going around of a man flashing gang signs, and they were like, look, this is Trayvon Martin, this is what he was involved with. And we also saw it with the shooting in 2014 of Michael Brown, where the New York Times described Brown as, quote, no angel. And so it's just like a trend that happens when Black Americans are targeted by white people, and the white people are not immediately villainized. And also, shortly after he was arrested, after this 24-hour citywide manhunt, his family released a statement to a local TV station that said Mr. Cowell was given a diagnosis of bipolar disorder and schizophrenia and had not received proper mental health treatment, which is tragic in and of itself. I think I'm not trying to downplay that he might have had actual mental problems, but we would not be having this conversation if he was not white. If he was any person of color, if he was Muslim, if he was brown, if he was African-American, Indian, anything, we would not talk about how he had mental problems. We wouldn't fucking care. But because he's white, it's being treated delicately, and it's not being seen for what it is, which is just a hate crime or an act of violence. But it's really, really, yeah.
That's crazy. He should... Oh, boy. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, it's truly crazy what you can get away with.
Yeah.
Just by the... Literally, like, the...
Just because you're white.
Your skin.
And it's absurd because...
I just lost my mind.
This administration has invigorated us and is trying to make us so fearful of this other person, whether it's a refugee, whether it's an immigrant, whether it's a Mexican or Muslim or whatever. They're trying to make minorities into these fearful things when really the most violent person in this country is the white man.
Yeah.
And like, despite law enforcement's assertion that it's still too early to tell if the crime was motivated by hate or race, the community obviously is really angry, and so there was a protest happening on Monday after the stabbing, and they're remembering Nina and demanding justice, and there was a quote that said, I feel that the community has failed people of color, and I feel like Bart has failed us from the beginning with Oscar Grant. How do we let a man get on Bart, slit a woman's throat, stab her to death, and walk off through our community with no stopping him? And I remind you that he was only stopped because of an anonymous tip to the police. Like, thank God for that anonymous tip, but why wasn't the, like, I feel like authorities don't take it that seriously if it's not one of their own. And I'm assuming the authority is white, and I'm, you know what I mean? So, it's really sad. And it's her whole family is just saying that, like, she's the one that they would have gone to for this if anything like this ever happened. 3 days after her death, her sister Malika Harris said that her family was struggling to process what had happened and to accept that she was gone. In any other situation, she said, they would be turning to Nia for comfort. She was always there and always motivating you to stay positive. As her family finalized her funeral plans on Wednesday afternoon, the man accused of stabbing her was formally charged with murder, and he made his first appearance in an Oakland court on Wednesday afternoon, which was today, but he did not enter a plea. And then her father, Ansar Mohammed, he went to the courthouse to attend the hearing, and he's quoted as saying, my daughter was everything to me. She was so beautiful, so inspirational, had dreams. I'm supposed to be planning her graduation, not her funeral.
Yeah.
It's really tragic. It's really upsetting. I'll put some of these articles on our footnotes because there's a long article from the New York Times, but there's a really even better one on Vox, VOX.com, and it's a very long one about the discussion of why this incident in particular is getting so much press and what the actual root is behind that and about the racial tensions and everything. And so I would really encourage you to read this entire article. It's like maybe like a 5-minute read, but it's really good. But it's just unfortunate because there's already so much fear and distrust in with minorities when it comes to law enforcement. And so when something like this happens and it's still it's treated with such disrespect, whether it's putting a photo of her that makes her look guilty or not really reacting right away, it's, I don't know. Like, people of color get shot for holding, like, a water gun or a cell phone. Yeah. And then a fucking white guy can walk away from a stabbing and get arrested so fucking peacefully. It's enraging. But...
That's heartbreaking. Yeah,
it's really heartbreaking, and I just wanted to at least address it in case it flew under your radar for whatever reason. Because it's... I don't know. Yeah.
And that's my area. That's, like, where I grew up. It's kind of heartbreaking. Like, I used to, like, hang out in that area a lot, taking the BART.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I always felt safe on the BART, and that's the crazy thing. You're not safe anywhere anymore. You're not safe in schools. You're not safe in a fucking train station. You're not safe in a mall or theater. Like, what's going on where this is just, like, a normal thing? And also, the other day, right next to the grocery store that I always go to in Los Angeles, there was, like, a hostage situation over there. So, like, grocery stores now are also somewhere where you're not safe. It's just everything, there's this, like, feeling of, I don't know, like, violence just in the air at all times.
Yeah.
It's just maddening. Trust no one. That's what it seems like. You can't trust anybody. And for people of color, that includes the police.
Well, I feel like this administration also incites just a bad vibe, like an evil vibe over everyone, so, like, no one is to be trusted while under the influence of this administration,
especially people of color. And I don't know, it's just it's a really tragic situation, and there's some funds going on for her for her family and stuff, so if you have the funds to donate, I would do that as well. And we'll talk a bit more about our experience here in Philadelphia after this quick commercial break. And we're back! I thought for the last little bit we could get, like, a little bit more personal about what we did in Philadelphia and, like, what our panels were about. And
maybe
some points that we think are important. We were told that the panels that we were on are filmed, and they're going to eventually be online for people to watch. So as soon as those are done, I feel like it's going to be a while for them to get edited and posted or whatever. But as soon as they're out there, we can't wait to share them with you. But in the meantime, so the title of the one that we were both on today was called Minority Voices in Podcasting. I want to at least bring up this one point. So the same day that we had our panel, there was another panel about women in podcasting. Okay? And that's great. I'm all about women in podcasting. The only thing is, every single woman on that panel was a white woman. On our panel, it was three people of color that were women talking about them. So it was just a little irked. It irked me a little bit when I found that out, that the women of color podcasters were on their own panel and in a smaller room, whereas the white women podcasters had their own thing called women podcasters. Like, what is... that enraged me. Like, we're still separated. We're still being made as the other. We're still... That's not inclusion. That's not diversity. That's further making us sit at our own table at the cafeteria. You know what I mean?
That's so weird. I didn't know that happened until someone told us. And it feels so... I think... For that panel, it was, like, women, like, older women who'd been in the industry for a while, like, industry professionals who'd been working on it for a while.
They should have called it that.
Right. But also, at the same time, I think because it's so hard to break into this industry, just any industry as, like, a person of color, that they didn't have any people of color to, like, who had had that.
Me and you and
I know, but I mean, like, but we don't have, I think, the experience like they had. Like, I think they were, like, women who, I'm not trying to defend this. I'm just saying, like, they were women who, like, were, like, heads of stuff.
That maybe should have been called industry professionals in the industry.
True, but...
Not women podcasters.
They're still women, so they have to be like, women, look, we got some women. But I think, like, that's the problem, though, is, like, no one is able to get that far who's a woman of color to be in charge of anything, so they can't do a panel like that.
That's just... It's infuriating, because I was on another panel yesterday, and it was called Diversifying the Podcast Media Landscape, also about being minority. Like, the minority podcasters are still put in minority panels. Like, put us in the same panels as the whiteys. Then that's real inclusion. But whatever, you know. I'll take what I can get.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem. It's like, you need... We're the only people that are allowed to talk about the minority experience, so they also want to, like, include that. But at the same time, they're not noticing that they're really just pushing us into a corner
exactly.
again. It's like, well, you're the minority, so you can only talk about one thing, which is about being a minority.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, what is my experience? It sucks.
It's exhausting to rehash it all the time. But, I don't know. It is helpful for people that are unfamiliar. I do want to maybe, like... bring up some of the points we talked about, like maybe how having a podcast has affected our sense of identity, you know, or who we looked up to growing up or something.
Yeah, I mean, I talked about this on the panel. Like, one person I really looked up to was Christiane Amanpour, and you guys probably know this because I bring her up all the time on this podcast.
She's amazing.
I think she's so great. She was like the one person I saw on TV. Like, she was a journalist. She was a half Iranian, half British. She had curly hair. She just looked like me. She looked like someone I could grow up and look like, basically. Yeah. Just like a Persian woman. And that was amazing. Like,
that's so reassuring as a child.
Yeah. And I would see her, and my dad would always be like, oh, this is Christiane Amanpour. She's so great. Like, and so it's like someone like my parents respected. It was so cool. And like, she brought up Middle Eastern issues. Like, honestly, like, no one on CNN was really talking about it. So, but her, like, she was always out in the field. It was like such a badass job. And I'd be like, damn, Christiane Amanpour is a baller. She does whatever she wants. She's out there. She's out there being like, yeah, I'm just going in. Or I don't know. She's British. So that's a terrible accent. But I don't know what that was. I'm Rocky. So it was amazing seeing her. And but that's it. Like, she was the only one. Like, I didn't see anyone else.
Yeah,
like,
I didn't have anybody. Yeah, I was on the panel, I was talking about how I had no Syrian person, and I still can't even name a Syrian American woman or just a Syrian person in general in the entertainment industry or in the media in general that I can look up to. Like, I have to invent that person for myself. I have to be that person myself. Like, the first person...
Or it's like a fictional character.
Yeah, or it's fictional. The first person I can even think of that I related to even a little bit was Sarah Silverman, only because she kind of looked like me. She had, like, dark hair, and she was funny, and I liked comedy, and she always talked really openly about depression and mental health and how she never wanted kids. And I was like, oh, look, I relate to this, but... The fact that I had to reach that far to be represented by anything, and that's not even me representing myself. That's just, like, finding a similarity with someone that is similar to me. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just, like, the fact that I still can't name anyone now is just unfortunate. And when you grow up as a kid and don't see yourself represented in the fields that you're interested in, you think it's not possible. And I think white people and people that are more privileged don't really understand, like, how that affects your psyche as a child. Like, when you see yourself always represented, like, as an actor, as a director, as someone that is a leader, you are already thinking of yourself that way. You know what I mean? It's not as easy as being like, well, just do it yourself. Like, why couldn't you just think of it yourself? It affects you as a child, because you don't see yourself doing the things you want to do, and that makes you feel like you can't do them.
It's kind of a bummer, and that's why we started the podcast. And it's we wanted just to be people that someone could be like, oh, I can do that.
Yeah. Like, oh, these can be my friends.
I can build that career. Yeah. You don't have to listen to your parents who are like, no, you have to be a doctor, lawyer, engineer, or whatever. Yeah. Like, you can be like, no, but they did it. Mm-hmm. So there's a chance that I could do it as well if I work hard, you know?
There's younger versions and different versions of ourselves out there that we want to connect with, and we want to relate to the weirdos and the aliens that we've always felt like growing up. Yeah. You know?
And you know, like, I'm no Christiane Amanpour.
Yeah. Wait, what do you mean? You're no, is that what you said? You're no Christiane Amanpour?
I was waiting for you to be like, of course you are. I was fishing. No, I'm just joking.
I think you're...
But I just waited like, okay, and?
She was looking right into my eyes.
Yeah, like, okay, sure. It's your turn to speak now to say that I am
I think Anna is a great Christiane Amanpour replacement. She's Thank my so Christiane Amanpour replacement.
No, Shireen, come on, you're just saying
that.
I was waiting for you to be like, no, I'm not just saying that. I really mean, I'm just kidding. I'm just like egging Shireen along by just glaring. The thing is, like, we're sitting with a light between us. So
we're very close to each other right now.
We're closer than we normally record, are.
We're looking right at each other's eyes. Usually you're like angled, you know, like on a table.
But now we're like leaning in and we're like looking at each other.
We're leaning into it. But that was something we talked about at the panel. This other thing we talked about on the panel that I thought was worthwhile was how it's affected our identity, as or like how it's affected our relationship with our identity, you know?
Yeah, and for me, it's been a lot of like standing up for myself and my culture. And burps are back, baby.
They're back.
Everywhere I go, I can't leave the city. They're on tour them. Too. Burps on tour.
Burps on tour. B.O.T. Find us.
So, yeah, I've kind of like learned to just speak up and not be like quiet. You know, my whole life I've been like, as a Middle Eastern kid, you're told, especially a Middle Eastern woman, mm-hmm. you're told to be quiet. Submissive. You're told to not stand yeah. out. You're told to keep to yourself and not cause problems. And after a while, you know, I kind of was like, no, I'm going to do the opposite of that. Mm-hmm. I'm going to cause all the goddamn problems. Yeah. I'm going to say everything on my mind. I'm going to be real psycho. And I'm not going to be afraid to be called a shrieking woman anymore, mm-hmm. you know? And that came, a lot of that transferred from the podcast. Because normally, like, before the podcast, whatever, I would say what was on my mind. But I wasn't as aggressive about it. I wasn't really as, like... Like, if someone was like, no, I don't think so, I'd be like, okay, whatever, I'm not going to keep fighting for this. But now, like, because of the podcast, because I found my voice and I know I, you know, what I say matters, like, when someone's like, well, I don't know about that, I'm like, okay, but how about, like, I try and take a different angle. Like, I keep trying. I keep trying to make my point heard. I keep trying to make my thoughts heard. I keep trying to make my story heard. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think that's very important to my identity.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think I've also become more proud of my identity and more outspoken and more willing to stand up for myself as well. I think I was very nervous going into this because I felt like a fish out of water when it came to podcasting, and I would censor myself more. I was more private, and I realized, like, when I was more honest and open, I connected with people so much more than I thought I would. People would reach out, people would tell me they felt less alone. And that's the whole point of the whole podcast. So it really validated those feelings of, like, worry about being... So because the things that made me different growing up are now the things that I really hold really valuable to me. And the podcast really helped me feel that way. And just being honest with myself helped me be more honest on the podcast. And, like, it's even, like, little things. Like, I was very, even in my writing, in my poetry, in my filmmaking, I never used Arabic. I never used the Arabic language. I almost felt like I was doing it a disservice, or I wasn't Syrian enough or something to use it. And now I feel like I can include that in my work, and it's all part of me, because I'm not just two separate beings. I'm just one person that has those identities within me. And that's really helped me a lot.
Yeah. That is, it's an interesting path that opens up, mm-hmm. where you're like, oh, I don't have to live this stereotype.
Yeah.
I can be like anyone else, but still hold this identity.
Yeah.
It's important. I say that a lot. I always say everything's important, but that's very important.
Yeah.
To like be able to hold on to your culture, but at the same time express yourself mm-hmm. in a way that you don't feel held back. You feel like you can basically do whatever if you put your mind to it, honestly. Yeah. Like, just,
and I was also nervous about my dad listening in the beginning. I was really nervous about him disapproving of something I've said, or like being like a quote like bad Muslim daughter or something. But he's as you heard last week, by the way, thank you to everyone that loved my dad, including myself. But he's so supportive.
And he's great. He held a great press conference.
Yeah, he was amazing. And being honest with you guys, including my family, is just a good thing. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think we also talked about how we would like to see the future of people mm-hmm. of color in podcasting. And I think we talked a lot about how you shouldn't, like, diversity is important, but you shouldn't ever tokenize anyone. Like, you shouldn't include a friend just to be like, we're diverse. Like, mm-hmm. you should include people of color in your projects or your, you know, whatever you're doing, because you want to hear their story and you want their view and you want their side to be like a part of the story. Like, you want their experiences to help like create the narrative of what's going on.
You want them as an equal, not as a side story. You know what I mean? Like, their story is just as valuable as yours. And you have to give it the respect it deserves. And, like, someone, there's a question on yesterday's panel that was like, I have a coworker that really wants to help and be an ally, but doesn't want to do the research. And I was like, that means that's not an ally. You know what I mean? Like, that's, if you don't want to do the research, you don't really care. If you don't want to do the research to know, like, how you can actually help a community and lift them up, you're just part of the problem. If you'd rather not know.
Yeah, if you'd rather not know, then you should get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
Because that's not okay. And in this world, where there are so many people, where the entire French team of the World Cup is basically made up of immigrants, yet they're one of the most racist places on Earth. Yeah. Like, it's
also
crazy.
Shout out to that. Like, shout out to all the fucking French Muslims and French African Americans and Arabs and the fucking soccer team. They fucking won it for everybody. That's the big reason why my dad was supporting the French soccer team, because he wanted it for them.
You know, I was actually supporting Croatia because I didn't want France to win because they're so racist towards, like,
but their team is comprised immigrants. Of so many amazing immigrants.
But who knows how they're treated once they... They might be treated great because they're soccer stars, but people of that same vein and culturally are not treated that way in France.
Yeah, that's very true.
Like, they are racist towards immigrants in France. They find them to be... Ugh, it's a whole thing. Maybe we'll do an episode on that one day.
France is trash. Sometimes, usually, I don't know. We have some time. I kind of want to read some emails and reviews. I can pass my computer back.
Oh, yeah, feel free. I do it.
Okay, cool.
I just denied taking that computer.
I want to read a shout out this email we got last week from Miranda Lord. She sent us a beautiful email. It was so nice to read. She basically talks about how this email has been sitting in her draft box for weeks, and she tells us a little bit history about her, how her mother moved from Egypt to America, and she worked as a translator. She spoke seven different languages. She met her dad, but she was raised going to, like, a Lebanese, like, Catholic church because it was, the part of her family, like, upbringing, being, like, raised by Coptic Christians, and... apparently, like, it just her, she talks about her history extensively. I'm not going to go into the whole thing, but basically the subject of the email was, I didn't realize when people ask what are you, they ask because they think you're different until recently. And she just thanks us for the podcast and for our take on mental health issues, and just I'm glad that she exists, and I'm glad that she reached out, because it just makes us feel less alone, and I'm just glad that we're, like, influencing at least, like, these just any amount of people that we're influencing is just means a lot to me. So Miranda, thank you so much for sending that email. I hope you listen to this and are happy, and thank you for being so personal and amazing in your email. I know it's hard to open up, but I really meant a lot to me.
Shout out
Miranda Lord.
And you tweeted us a lot. We know who you are. I know who you are.
That was me snapping.
I know who you are, Miranda. I say that with, like, a V for Vendetta mask on. I know who you are.
We'll find you.
What?
There's some reviews. Want to read a review?
Sure. I have to pull up my iTunes first. Okay. I'm not prepared.
Sorry. I'll read one first and I'll wait for you.
I'm so silly.
The most recent review is called Moms and Dads, and it's from Old Fart. F-A-H-R-T.
Nice.
I enjoy every episode, but my favorites are when they have their parents on. In episode 52, Shireen's dad talked about how and why he came to America, and he had a great story about how he was able to marry his wife. It's great how loving and supportive both women's parents are. As an old white guy, it's great to hear other perspectives and learn new things. Thank you both. I hope you keep going for a long time. So nice. Thank you, old fart.
Old fart. We got another one called Dads from another Kate1320. I've been a fan of your podcast for a while now, but I want to say how much I loved episodes 51 and 52, especially. It was so lovely to hear from your parents. I teared up at work this morning listening to Shireen's dad, but I also want to say how much I appreciate listening to your takes on the news, which, of course, I have rarely come across in mainstream coverage, and agree 100% that the New York Times is trash. Hell Woo! Yeah. Their op-ed page is about clicks, not good ideas. I remember hating Bari Weiss's writing since her ice-cold take on hashtag Me Too, but didn't know about her vast of anti-Arab drivel. Thanks so much for all of you, all you do to educate people while always coming from a really genuine and vulnerable place. I'm sure that takes a toll sometimes, so I'm grateful to you both for keeping at it. Thank you so much, another Kate that is very kind.
It's really, really kind. I want to read one called Thumbs Up from an Old White Guy by 70s Woodstock. These two young women have succeeded in opening my eyes to another side of the Middle East story. Having spent 25 years in a conservative evangelical community where Israel can do no wrong and everything they did was unquestionably right, Ethically Ambiguous has introduced me to another perspective. Specifically, their episodes covering some of the atrocities committed by Israel against the Palestinian people have both been heartbreaking and maddening. Keep up the great work, ladies, and go a little easier on us old white guys. Not all of us are super close-minded. Love your show.
All right, 70s Woodstock. We'll take it easy.
You're a good one. You're a good one. I really appreciate every listener we have. Yes. I mean, we get a lot of reviews and emails being like, I'm white, don't hate me. I'm not going to hate you. I mean, like, we give white people a lot of shit because they can take it.
We don't hate white people. We just, you know, it's a comedy podcast and sometimes you need a scapegoat.
Yeah. We've been one
and,
for too long.
Let's be real. Got white people. Come on. White people. You guys are just so fun.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's just so easy to make fun of you guys. But also you can take it. You've been
Yeah, you have everything.
Yeah, you have everything else.
You could just murder people. I know. Literally. It's insane.
Oh god. Oh my god, it's really sad.
Mm-hmm. It's really sad, but it's so real. It's so fucking
Justice
real.
Justice for Nia Wilson.
For real.
Do you want to read one more?
Sure.
Okay.
I'm gonna read Such an Important Show by Charlie Alex 56. Two first names, love that. If I could give this podcast more stars, I would. Oh my god. Anna and Trina are amazing hosts, educating and talking about many subjects that don't get enough of a voice in our culture. They talk about Middle Eastern history in more detail than I'm pretty sure any American that went through the public school system has ever heard about. They aren't afraid to talk about difficult geopolitical topics that really do need to be discussed and not condensed down into a meme or soundbite that reductively confirms already held beliefs. Their podcast also talks a lot about growing up ethnically ambiguous in the U.S. and dealing with existing in the U.S. There is so much I've learned just about how much lived experience is so different with American, I think. That being willing to share their personal experiences to the world is so brave. You two are helping so many people learn and learn how to talk to others about important issues. They are so responsive and personally helpful. Just all around great people.
Aww,
that's
thanks,
so nice,
Charlie Alex.
I do want to say it's so weird to read reviews where someone's like talking about you and you're like, yeah, totally, I'm great.
No, but I just like shouting them out. I mean, it is kind of weird.
No,
it like
is
self-indulgent,
cool.
I guess. But
yeah, we're really, but you don't understand. Like, this podcast is so hard to do. The haters are fucking real.
But we do appreciate all the reviews and emails. So if you have a chance and you haven't done it yet, please go to iTunes or your podcast app and leave a 5-star glowing review and we might read it.
Glow.
Well, we'll definitely read it, but we might read it on when we record.
Yeah, yeah. We'll read it.
I check that constantly for new ones.
I don't. I'm afraid of everything.
I just need to know what's going on. I must know.
We hope this episode wasn't horribly audio fucked. Mm-hmm. Hopefully it's not, and it gets released and nothing bad happens. Fingers crossed.
It'll be fun.
Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for everyone who came to Podcast Movement. Thank mm-hmm. you to Podcast Movement for having us and letting us talk.
That I vented about you, but thanks.
Yeah, thank you to Bridget, Todd for being there with us and having a good time. Mm-hmm. And yeah, thanks to our network for letting us go and be ourselves. And
yeah,
It
was cool. We felt like VIPs, you know? We felt cool.
Yeah, we were VIPs. VIPs at Podcast Movement. So thank you again for leaving reviews. Give us more reviews, 5 stars, tell a friend, please. It's so important that you tell a friend
about the podcast. Let's share it
and follow us on ethnicallyambiguouspod.com for our footnotes for this episode. Follow us at ethnicallyambig, AMBIG, on Instagram. We're posting a bunch of content, baby. We're mm-hmm. hashtag content all day. If you want to see the photo of Shireen, me punching Shireen in front of Rocky, we posted that on our hashtag content creative space hashtag Instagram. If you want to follow us on Twitter, at ethnicallyamb, A-M-B. We are hashtag contenting there as well.
I'm out of control. Content, constant content.
You can follow me at my content space on Twitter at Anna Hosnier, A-N-N-A-H-O-S-S-N-I-E-H. Shereen, content space?
Yeah, my content space, it's Twitter. It's Shereen Y, S-H-E-R-E-N-W-H-Y. And then on Twitter, nope, on Instagram, I'm Shirohero, S-H-E-E-R-O-H-E-R-O. I promise one day my handles will mash, but until that can happen, until the fucking Shirohero on Twitter gives me up her name, I will not have it.
Hashtag content, baby.
I've been bothering this woman that has Shirohero for the longest time.
Yeah, she needs to give it up.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, thanks so much for being here. And I am going to New York tomorrow. Oh, yeah. This will be out on Monday after the screening, but I'm really excited. My short film Fall is screening at the New York MoMA on Sunday night. And I just realized the other day that I've actually never screened it in a theater. So it's going to be like a premiere at the MoMA. It's online. It premiered online in the spring, even though it's like a 2-year-old movie. But I've never put it on a theater. So it's kind of exciting. And it's a cool feeling to have your film premiere at the Museum of Modern Art.
That's super. I know MoMA. That's like legendary.
So yeah, I'm really excited. Yes. And
I want to also shout out, I did a Ramin Nazer fellow Iranians podcast called The Rainbow Brain Skull Hour. It's so fun. It's a great time. He animated me for the image for the podcast. Go check it out. Rainbow Brain Skull podcast. Mm-hmm. We talk about so many crazy things like being Iranians, and we talk about like death and afterlife, and it's like 2.5 hours. You don't have to listen to the whole thing, but if you want to, it's pretty crazy. We talk about drugs and life and like existence. And he's the coolest dude ever. So you should check out his podcast regardless, because he's a comedian. He's so wonderful. He's an animator. Mm-hmm. He's like he knows how to design apps. He's like creative. All around very smart dude. Great dude. So check out that podcast if you want to hear some really deeper info about me and my life. I talk about what happens when I lose my shit, like how emotionally what I go through. It's pretty crazy. Because that's like what you can get on the Rainbow Brain Skull podcast.
Mm-hmm. In depth.
And he interviews a lot of really great comedians like Duncan Trussell and whoever else is on. Okay. So
with that,
Shereen, you gonna bite that ass?
I bite that ass.